we might as well get started. We're a couple of minutes after the hour and haven't heard any people join in the last few minutes. Welcome to the next teleconference of the Country and Territory Name Study Group. Probably our third or fourth intersessional one in advance of Prague. Just to start with, Gabby, Christina, did we have any formal apologies for the sake of process? Did we have any apologies that were noted for this call?
Yes, we have four apologies from Joke Brecken, Bahir Esmat, Irmgarda Kassin Kaipe Budeberg, and Annabeth Lange.
Okay, thank you very much. Yap, are you on the phone line or are you just following us in the meeting room, in the Adobe Connect room at this stage?
Hello, who's your
name? I'm actually...
Yes, Yap, you're here. I can hear you. Someone else joined.
It's Ian.
Hello, Ian. Welcome. So.
Yep. Hello, Ian. It's Paul. We were just getting underway. I wasn't targeting you in any particular way. I just wanted to check those that had made some contributions on the list in between times, and particularly if I wanted to refer to people, I just wanted to check they were actually on the phone line. So I'll just start by saying thank you to Yap and Keith and Annabeth for making some comments in advance of this call. Very welcome. For this particular session, I just sort of wanted to follow the standard agenda that we had in the past couple of teleconference calls, so working through the issues roughly broken up along the lines of the categories that were in the survey that UNESCO is currently undertaking. While I mention that, and before we start, I noted that Bahir was unable to get on this call and Garda's not here either, so I was just going to throw it to Bart quickly. Had you heard any updates from UNESCO yet or through Bahir at all?
No, it's. I know that in the background there is an exchange going on the translations, and once that's concluded, they will send out the survey.
Right, and that's about organising the translation or funding the translation, or
it's
just the logistics of making it happen.
It's organising and funding the translation.
Just for everyone, that if they're a little bit unclear, it was recommended that as part of the survey going out that it be translated into a number of languages, which is only appropriate, and that, of course, adds a little bit of lead time in terms of the process, but hopefully that will be finalised soon and we'll get moving. It is a little unfortunate because as we're nearing Prague, we continue our theoretical discussions of the different issues and topics and categories without any... evidence or input from the survey yet, nor from the stalled new GTLDs process, which both of which might have provided us with something to digest. But we can continue as we're going at the moment, and then hopefully after Prague we'll have some more substance to chew on. Hello, who joined?
This is Eduardo Diaz.
Hello, Eduardo. Welcome.
Hello.
Eduardo, hi, it's Paula. We've only just gotten underway. I wasn't intending to cover off on any sort of background on this call or updates. It was just a quick check for as much as anything for my benefit as to whether Bard had heard anything from UNESCO, but we can all safely assume that the survey processes are underway, and as we all appreciate, in an intergovernmental organisation, these things take time. As we appreciate in a multi-stakeholder environment like ICANN, new GTLDs process takes time, so we'll put those to the side for the time being and carry on with our current analysis of issues. The ones that I'd proposed for today's call were getting lower down on the list of the UNESCO categories, and that was the way in which country and territory names are represented in the six official languages of the UN. And then also the next question was how survey respondents how they would refer to in their language to the other respondents as part of the survey. So how you refer to country X and Y in your own language. And then the third one was examples of a country or territory name in non-official languages. That was the working through this process, we're looking at other representations getting the global perspective, not your official language, not necessarily the way in which you would refer to your country in a long or short form term, but rather how you would see others and how others would refer to you. The last one, examples of names in non-official languages, was largely a catch-all category. If you recall, that sat at the end of the survey, so it may look a little strange here. And it's not intended to include things like common names. We had Holland as another example in another category, nor indigenous or minority group languages. I thought we'd sort of put that aside. We'd bite off more than we could chew if we tried to cover five collectively on one teleconference call. But I noted that there were a lot of overlaps between them, and it may, for the purpose of this call, so we get a decent conversation going, put them aside, put aside the categories, still highlight some examples, but just consider them together, and then in the context of how they're used in current or future ICANN policies and processes. Just because I had nothing better to do today, I just quickly knocked together, which still hasn't quite presented properly, on the next slide, that if you were to pick, and I only picked Poland because I knew most of them anyway, but when you look at a country name in the six official UN languages, it will necessarily overlap with other categories that we'd established as part of the survey. The name in non-official languages would also overlap with the way other respondents might consider your country name. So again, I've got the Russian, French, Chinese, English, Arabic, and Spanish representations of the country name of Poland. None of which, of course, are the name of the country in the official language. So then, all of them become non-official language representations of it. And then other respondents, in the case of a German response or a Czech response, may or may not be part of how the other respondents in the survey may or may not refer to your country. So I'm just highlighting that there's a lot of overlap here, and I appreciate the categories that we set up for the purposes of the survey were part of a methodology, and that there actually is a lot of overlap here, and that we're kind of artificially dividing these into different categories and addressing them in separate chunks, intentionally for the sake of getting through our work. But today, I might want to vary from that just a little bit. Thanks to Yap's input and also the consideration that Keith had given to sources and lists and what we might use or what has been used to refer to country and territory names before. And the reason I've tried to flip this around the conversation today this way is because you could see that any of the sources we might use would cover off, in all likelihood, the categories we were talking about, the name of a country in the UN languages or the way you may refer to another country, et cetera, et cetera. It would be covered off in these sources, some of which were covered off with the UNGEGN manual and also a working paper that I'd come across, which was working paper number 54 of one of their study groups, or it might have been a plenary-type session from Vienna in 2011, so it's actually relatively current. And and Yapa, as I know you've noted in the chat room, this was not meant to be an exhaustive list. You're absolutely right. There are many more sources around, and I just thought I'd identify a few. Do you have any others off the top of your head, or was there a particular observation you wanted to make about some of these lists or their potential shortcomings?
Well, there's actually a list of lists, and I will actually post. It's called Statoids, which is a list of... they have about 8 different sources next to each other, and references to other lists like the Stanag, the European Community List for Economical Affairs, and I mean, there are way more. But so that if anybody's interested in what's around, I mean, that is a good source to start as well.
I think what's particularly useful about digging all these up, and rest assured I'm definitely becoming increasingly familiar with them and archiving them for future reference, is because it just goes to illustrate the point as to how many lists are out there, many of which have some official status for one or more intergovernmental organisations, and therefore by the various definitions that have been used in past or current ICAM processes, they would all or some be eligible for consideration or could be used as a reference point to determine eligibility, etc., in a given process. So in this case, I just, again, flagged distinguishing the UNG EGN working paper from the manual, because the particular working paper that I referred to from Vienna was actually listed in all six languages of the UN, so it kind of ties it back. Not, it is based on the manual, hence 193 names like in the manual, but it actually outlines the representations of all those country codes in all of those countries in the six official languages. And then the other lists that we'd referred to. Keith, are you on the phone or just in the chat room? I'll take that as just in the chat room. There you are.
I'm not on the phone, but I'm in Adobe Connect.
I can actually hear you quite well. You'd done that little bit of research work on as part of your working group's activities, and another UN list and how that compares to ISO.
Yes. Well, we've looked at ISO 3166 versus other things, but I guess it's all a bit academic. There are as many lists as there are countries on the longest list you can find.
Yeah. Well, all of them have a different definitional basis. Obviously, where you'd start from, you would assume a lot of the UN ones, as Yap pointed out, are working off a basis of member states, and therefore they may not necessarily be inclusive of territories or those on the periphery. I threw in a WIPO standard list just because it sits in terms of total numbers. The WIPO standard that I referred to there also allocated codes or used codes or recognised various intellectual property, national or regional intellectual property organisations. So the list was actually quite a bit longer, but once you take those out, they're down to sort of 221 names. And then the UN standards group had a list of names as well, and that's based on a terminology bulletin that ICANN has referred to in the past in previous processes, and that's getting up to 240 names. We're getting close to ISO 3166, which sort of sits at the top of the list with 249. And just before I moved on, I know there was a comment in the chat room by Cheryl about instances of overlap between them and the most commonly used lists and what's considered to be authoritative. Well, in terms of what's authoritative, these are all put out with the imprimatur of at least one agency or one intergovernmental organisation or one particular organ of the UN. So to that extent, they all are, with their particular expertise and their particular focus, authoritative. The next slide is a picture that I took a bit of time putting together, but it's just showing that this is where there is overlap and there isn't overlap between the different lists. Moving from the UN GEGN manual, and I'm sorry, now that we're presenting it in the room, like this has been cut off a little bit from the way I had it originally set up, but Keith had raised the issue of, well, there was Bolivia and it appeared on some lists represented as Bolivia, or the plurinational state of Bolivia on other lists, or actually, in the case of some lists, as both. Then when you come to more... But that, to an extent, is splitting hairs, but it's quite an interesting difference to note. And then you come to other entities, you look at Cook Islands, they don't appear on any of the UNGEGN lists, but then on quite a few of the others. It's not as though ISO 3166 is out there on the extreme. Serbia and Montenegro, another interesting case. You'll see Serbia, Montenegro as separate entries on most of these lists. And then, of course, as Keith noted, I've sort of wrapped that up as a yes and no because it's divided separately, identified separately on the ISO list. Likewise, with other entities, like whether we're talking about Hong Kong or Puerto Rico or Palestinian territories, some appear on some lists and not on others. The point I'm trying to get at here is that there are either failings or inconsistencies or, okay, failings may be too strong a word, there are differences between the lists given what their scope and purpose and what their definitions are, some of which aren't necessarily trying to capture territories, but this is where you can get into a problem, into a trap, having a heavy reliance on lists. I'm conscious, Martin, you had your hand up in the Adobe room. Would you like to make a comment?
Yeah, please. I'm a bit confused about what the reds and what the greens are. I'm assuming I assumed that red meant that it wasn't on a particular list.
That's
and that
correct.
Green that it was. But in fact, Libya is certainly on the ISO 3166 list because it's BO. And it's listed under that list as Bolivia Plurinational State of.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yes, I did take some liberties with how I define that. And I think more particularly the point was that on the Uniterm list, it actually appears twice. It's listed as both. So I do take your point that yes, Bolivia is on the 3166 list, and it's identified in bracketed terms. Sorry, Martin, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's all right, because it was a question, and it's, you sort of deal with it, but I think I would actually argue that Bolivia does exist on the ISO 3166 list, whether it appears
split hairs about the representation of.
Yeah, I hadn't got to that sort of level of detail, but certainly, you know, a little bit like... we're down there as the United Kingdom, but in fact our code is GB, but in fact actually it's the same entity and we just actually have two codes depending on what is being done with them. The other one though is Serbia and Montenegro, and you've listed that both as being on and being off. It's on because it's transitionally reserved because the country doesn't exist anymore. You know, I think that when we're actually sort of looking at the country names and the cross links of the country names, it starts becoming a little bit academic if we start sort of taking countries that ceased to exist whenever it was it 10 years ago, 12 years ago now, and confuses, I'm not sure, with any sort of great advantage. So really my question to you is, why do you think that we would need to consider what lists Serbia and Montenegro still exist on?
Thanks, Martin. No, point well taken. And Sokol, I know you made the same comment as well. Yes, it is. The list of names I tried to throw together there were an attempt to cover some of the different... the reasons why there might be inconsistencies between the lists. So something being explicitly Bolivia being referred to on a particular list as Bolivia and Bolivia only, as it happens on some of them, versus the more expansive title, just means that it is represented in a slightly different way on a particular list. That may or may not end up being a problem, but it is slightly different on one and another. Cook Islands was just an example of something that does appear on some and not on others. Serbia and Montenegro was an attempt at recent history, perhaps, highlighting recent historical names and how lists are changing to evolve, and they some evolve faster than others. South Sudan is then the counterpoint of that, as a recent name, a recent change, and that's why I've thrown it on there. I'm not particularly highlighting any of these as being worthy of further exploration, but it was rather to highlight a point, hence putting it in a table. And then when you come to, for obvious reasons, you'll see Hong Kong and Puerto Rico and Palestinian territories as you know, again, different examples treated in different ways on different lists, and we all understand the political sensitivities thereof. So again, no particular desire to draw attention to Serbia and Montenegro. It's just that, well, it still does exist on certain lists, and I did try to couch that, and try to clarify that as it has a particular status on the ISO list. But again, not trying to make an overly big deal about that one. You had your hand up for a while. Did you want to add in?
Yeah, I can actually explain some of the differences. And Bolivia actually changed the name pretty recently, and some of these sources are older, are actually from before that time. And also, lately there's better communication between the UN term and statistical office and ISO. Sometimes, I mean, states had to were changing their name, but only didn't bother to tell ISO, or didn't bother to tell UNTERM, so that's why sometimes there's some differences. And but actually, lately things are much more synchronized. And but the date of the list are older. If you want to see what is changing regularly over time, you can find on the ISO website the complete list of what changed since the last official standard as well, and find the reasons. So there are quite some reasons why, a lot of them are more trivialities than anything else. And I don't know why Serbia, Montenegro is still why the term is not up to date, but it is older than that the communication has been improved, so it might just be an error. People do make mistakes.
And I also can't quite recall having gone through so many lists yesterday, but I suspect that list may well have also had Serbia and Montenegro separately, so I'm not quite sure. But again, it was just an attempt to... this isn't particularly trying to... a whole bunch of red lights doesn't mean that the UNGEGN manual is completely irrelevant, because for its particular purposes, it does what it does. And the other entities' particular reasons do not appear on it, because according to the categories for that particular reference, they don't fit in that as part of that list. Really, this was just a attempt to highlight some of the differences. I know there's a queue of hands again, so Bart, I'm sorry, you had something to chime in.
Yeah, maybe as a result from this discussion, what is probably noteworthy is that, say, we got this whole array of lists, that some of them, they're not synchronized of dates. Say, some are very old, and that the working group or the study group notes this, because that will impact the use of lists in future as well.
Yeah, look, thanks, Bart. I mean, I'm very much getting towards that point as part of this discussion and as part of the interaction on this call, because I've been conscious that we'd avoided this discussion of lists and how ICANN uses them, but just because of the three sort of categories we're looking at today, they all nicely sort of mesh into the one sort of discussion. I'd tried it today, so in a few slides' time, you'll see that there's a couple of points that I made about what you do with those lists and what this study group might like to observe as to the general phenomenon of using lists. Yep, did you have another comment? Your hand was still up, or otherwise I'll go to Martin. Martin, I think the floor is yours.
Okay, thanks, Keith. Sorry about that. Yeah, sort of brain going out of gear. The example of Serbia and Montenegro, it stays on the list because there is a rule under the ISO list that allows any code that falls out of use to be transitionally reserved so that you end up with a sort of clear separation. My understanding was that because of some of the problems that have arisen in the past, mainly on the internet sector, that transitionally reserved is now a very, very long reservation. It's something like 50 years, quite eccentric. But transitionally reserved just simply means that you should no longer be using it, but nobody else can take the code. It is on the list, but really, in effect, it is no longer on the list. More fundamentally, it comes down to what we're looking for are the names of the countries and how they are used. And I think you're perfectly right. New countries suddenly get created, like South Sudan, and none of us has got any ability to assess what new names of countries might appear in the forthcoming and near future, which I think then is sort of quite fundamentally the reason why when we've looked at two-letter codes, it's always been, well, all two-letter combinations have been reserved by ICANN. We can't actually touch the two-letter codes for anything else, quite simply because any new country comes along, has to get slotted into that, and could then lead to a problem on something that was otherwise allocated. The other point I think I'd make was actually echoing a comment that that Annabeth made on list, it was the fact that the ISO list has got prior form in the ICANN space, I think probably whatever other things we take into account, we probably always need to refer finally back to the ISO 3166 list, to which then we might need to have addenda, because we've had a sort of a new name or a new country name coming in. And then the third point, going back to Bolivia, whatever else happens, I can imagine that Bolivia, in spite of whatever complex name its country decides to it will still be the country formerly known as Bolivia.
Hmm. Yeah, agreed, and certainly no issues when it comes to BO, but... No, look, your points are all well taken, Martin, and certainly the relative primacy of the ISO list is something that I was working to later on in the slideshow. So certainly don't seek to diverge from that view at all. I was conscious that...
Sorry to steal your thunder then.
Yeah, no, not at all, not at all. Just I'm glad people agree with me before I say something. Saves me the work. But I'm conscious that Yap had his hand up as well, and he wanted to say something in response to your comments, Martin. Yap, the floor's yours.
Yes, I want to comment on what is the ISO list and what is not. The ISO list is the official standard. The reserved names is not part of the standard, so you should not really confuse them. And this, and Serbia and Montenegro, I mean, the names are of the standards. I mean, that's what it is. And that there is still some, there are some reserved codes. Actually, Serbia is reserved twice. And it's actually separate from that. I mean, if I reserve to the ISO list, I only mean the official standard list and not anything of the reserve list or other things which are connected to it. I mean, because that's not part of the standard. And if you actually go to the 3166 homepage, it is explained there, what is reserved and what is the real official list. And also about Bolivia, at the same place you find the official change of the name of Bolivia. I mean, if you look at the tracking of the update, you see that there are a lot of changes of names, which a lot of people are not aware of, but what do happen on a regular basis.
No, look, your points are certainly well taken up. I think in the case of the way these things have played out in ICANN processes in the past, you'll note some will make reference to ISO 3166-1, and then there will be additional references to, or if you're on a transitionally reserved list, or if et cetera, et cetera. So definitionally speaking, I think it's generally appreciated, though probably worth this study group noting separately, that there is a distinction between what is the standard and what are the provisionally or transitionally reserved names sitting on the side of it, and that there needs to be clarity in terms of what you mean when you are reserving certain ones or including certain terms and not others.
The basic rule for the transitional reserved is now that they should not be used within 50 years when possible, but there's no guarantee that they will be reallocated, that they won't be reallocated. It might always happen when there's a real shortage of code.
Oh, absolutely. I think we also, tracking up, picking up some of the commentary that we're also getting on the chat room at the moment. Again, the purpose in highlighting some of these lists is, and I'd only plucked up the courage to go into the depth of lists now that the working groups are well progressed, is that these have been used and referred to in particular instances in the past, and none of this is to be deemed to be a proposition on my part that ICANN should use them. It's just an attempt to illustrate that there are different lists out there, and when we get onto the conversation about, for example, the new GTLDs process, where you talk about country names as part of, and I'm just actually checking the wording that I'd noted down further on the list, commonly known names was included as part of the applicant guidebook, but the qualifying criteria as part of that was that is used by intergovernmental organizations. That would necessarily qualify any of these lists as part of the new GTLDs process, because they could be used, or they could be, at somebody's discretion, used as a reference point as part of the current first round of the new GTLDs. Again, it's not a particular attempt to say these lists are definitive, important, particularly fit for purpose for what we're discussing, but just to note that there are a number out there. I'll just try and move on a little bit quickly now to get to the point that I was trying to get at. And look, basically, that there is some inconsistency, and I apologise for the typographical errors throughout the slideshow, but we all know hopefully what I'm talking about. But there are inconsistencies between some of the lists, and generally speaking, the ISO list has been most frequently used within ICANN. ICANN is part of the maintenance agency, or they have a participation role there. It is the most comprehensive list because it's the most expansive, and therefore there's some certain reasoning as to why we would continue using that and why it's the logical first starting point for all future activities. I just noted, and it was only a question mark as it currently stands, yep, feel free to correct me, but the ISO list is currently published in English and French, is that correct?
Well, yes.
Yes. The ISO... hello?
Oh. Yes,
the ISO only published the names in France and English.
And again, that's not necessarily a criticism, but just an observation that there are other lists out there, such as the working group document that I referred to, that is the names of fewer countries on there, mainly because it doesn't include territories, as Keith identified in the breakup that he did, and some of which are extremely politically sensitive and should probably be considered. But at least it was published and put out there in all official six languages of the UN. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a problem, but it just
yes.
means the source that we're referring to, is there a natural translation to it in Spanish or Russian or et cetera, et cetera?
It's the UN who does this translation. I mean, what you will find in the full standard, part one, is actually an information, which is non-normative list with other names in other languages, but that's not really part of the official standard. So.
No, it's just a point to note, and again, not a criticism, but just an observation that it is published in two languages and two of the six official languages, but not all. Now, what I wanted to then move on to was how, this is the flip side, looking at it from the other side, that the way in which ICANN has now used these lists or sources in the past and with the IDN fast track, and this is where Bart's going to cut me down very quickly if I've misinterpreted or misrepresented something. But the ISO list was used to determine eligibility. If you were eligible for the process, to be eligible for the process, you had to be represented on that list. And yet then, as part of the meaningfulness test, if I recall correctly, there was a reference to the UNGGN manual. Is that right, Bart? Did I recall that correctly?
First of all, I think the reason for including the ISO 3166 is it's not just for the fast track. It's probably far more important. It is the basis for CCs as well.
Of course.
And that's what we have to be very careful not to forget this, as Keith correctly noted in say his email. That's why it was included in the IDN fast track. You had to be, a country or a territory name had to be listed on the ISO 3166 in order to be eligible, in order to reflect the same as CCTLD. As to country or territory name as listed, this was just a initial, this is part of that rule or clause. If you are listed, then further proof was not needed. But there is a whole mechanism in the fast track and will probably be included in the overall policy as well, that at the end of the day, it's a matter of the country or territory itself to determine what is a meaningful representation of the name of the country or territory.
That's right. So as I'd referred to on the slide, there was a catch-all there in terms of if there could be any verification or confirmation from national naming authorities, and again, within the UN processes, there's long lists of recognised, I think as part of the process they went through, 43 member states identified national naming authorities, and I know there's certainly a council for geographic names for Australasia here in Australia. So there are entities within certain countries, or there could be linguistic authorities who had the experience to make those determinations, or someone else if you're in a country or region that didn't have one of those authorities, then there's someone else by mutual agreement between yourselves and ICANN.
Paul, this is just to document it is a meaningful representation. At the end of the day, it's a matter of say, the government and all other significantly interested parties to determine what is a meaningful representation.
Oh, absolutely, and I agree, and I note that subtlety. The only purpose of my including it on here is trying to capture where different mechanisms and different the way we do things and the reasons we do them, how they've all been included in different ICANN processes. UNGEGM manual was brought in as part of the IDM fast track for a particular reason, all sitting under the umbrella of ISO 3166 at the top, understood. There were different purposes, and the concept of actually using national naming or linguistic authorities or someone else was subservient to that, but it was still brought in as a concept as part of the process, wasn't it?
Yep.
So it's not in any way meant to suggest that that's affecting the primacy of ISO 3166. It's just noting that's the way it is. I then also noted with the overall policy, but has this changed at all? As it currently stands, it is the working group status is that it refers to 3166 and then exceptional cases, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, this is still the same.
Yeah, so in a way, officially, the way it's working through the broader policy process is a reference to 3166, and I've cut some notes there, but also exceptionally reserved terms. So again, this is an example of getting back to what Yup was talking about, where you must be cautious in terms of referring to the standard, because if you also mean exceptionally reserved or transitionally reserved cases, you should be clear and you should make mention of that. There you go. In the case of the IDM process as it currently stands, it does make reference to that. That then brings me on to the new GTLDs process, which is probably, I don't think anyone would argue, probably the most expansive in terms of protections or possible protections, so much so that there's some that I didn't even get to throw into this slideshow, but obviously there is the ISO list and the long form name or short form name of a country in any language. That whole concept of in any language is something I've always had some difficulty with dealing with, because with someone with more expertise in linguistics than I do would just blow their mind in terms of how expansive that could possibly be. It also included the exceptionally reserved terms, etc. There was, of course, the annex. Well, sorry, it was an annex that was thrown in a separable country name, so if it was a X and Y state, then the separate parts could be reserved as well, of course. Permutations of a country name, putting the at the end or taking the out, etc. And then, of course, a reference to commonly known names. And I raised this before. It's not common names as Bart raised, and we'd included the criteria as part of our questionnaire for UNESCO, the survey for UNESCO, commonly known names. This was categorised in terms of that is as being used by intergovernmental organisations, and therefore, theoretically at least, it brings in all those other lists that we were talking about. You raised a question there just in the chat room. I wasn't sure. Long form name in any language according to ISO.
I wonder what they mean, because as far as I know, it doesn't exist in as an ISO standard or whatever. So.
And then.
I don't know. I'm not aware that it exists. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you're quite right. I mean, I'm paraphrasing the 2.2.1.4. I can't remember of the applicant guidebook, which refers to one of the criteria I think they say is the long form name listed in the ISO standard or a translation of that in any language. That's the wording of the applicant guidebook as it currently stands, I believe. Just an observation. So your perspective that doesn't exist in that form is a valuable one anyway. And then again, on the next slide, look, I'd very just quickly, and this is just very rough, because I had the same table of a certain amount of lists, most of these lists as part of particular processes aren't referred to, aren't used by ICANN at all, but the main purpose was to say that the new GTLDs process does refer to ISO 3166, but going back a step, when you talk about the commonly known name used in other intergovernmental organisations I'd have to check the precise wording, and again, I don't have it in front of me, but that would certainly allow the potential for other lists to be used as references. They could be used as an example. Oh, Soko, I'm sorry. Yellow is just... I'm sorry, I'm using a traffic light system, and I should have explained that before I started. Green being that, yes, they are officially used, as they are formally referred to as part of the process. Yellow meaning that they're not officially referred to but alluded to. So it's a yes but no. It's not either a red light nor a green. It's somewhere in the middle. And as I said, as it currently stands with the applicant guidebook, the final criteria when it comes to a definition of a country name is a name by which a country is commonly known, as demonstrated by evidence that the country is recognised by that name by an intergovernmental or treaty organisation. So therefore, you could be using that as a form of evidence that this is a legitimate use, this is a current or a commonly known use of the name. Therefore, surely any of those lists, a particular applicant or, of course, a complainant or someone voicing an objection could be citing any one of those other documents. So they've, in a way, been brought into play without being explicitly mentioned by the fact that there's a catch-all clause in there. And that's what I've tried to capture by referring to them as yellow light. I can certainly refer to other lists and other processes that I'm aware of that have gone on in previous ICANN processes. .info, of course, had a long and laborious process in terms of the definition and the identification of what was not a country name and some of the protections of geographical identifiers. .info, there may have been earlier ones, but it's probably my earliest interaction with ICANN where I came across that in about 2002, so it's not a new phenomenon. There was also .travel was a fascinating example from an Australian perspective because the folks at .travel were so keen to secure that sponsored TLD at that stage that they'd gone out to member states through GAC and through other formal approaches and asked for names to be reserved. And again, we went to our national names authority and they gave us an almost endless list of all geographic identifiers in Australia. That was 300,000 names for Australia alone. So it just serves to show they're not particularly relevant to this process because they're almost ancient history now, but it just goes to show that there's some inconsistency between how they've been handled. It might have evolved a little bit over time, but no one's going to suggest that it's absolutely right at this stage. And that gets me to the point, and really the questions that I had. Does anyone on the call have a view as to how the study group's going to note this? This is getting down to the big questions that we had to face. Yes, we know there are different lists out there. That's part of the acknowledgement and probably would help to prove our point that there is no definitive list out there and for various purposes. And as Heather noted earlier, various histories, and some are more dated than others, and they've got certain processes, so the fact that they've got fewer names on them shouldn't be deemed to be a shortcoming, but they're not tailored for this purpose. We notice they all exist. There are inconsistencies. Some might suggest, well, you pick a list and stick to it. That would obviously, I guess, I'm being a bit presumptuous there, be ISO 3166. But could you do ISO plus in terms of making some other qualifications in terms of much like the new GTLD process, or making reference to lists used in other intergovernmental organisations? Did anyone have any views? And this is a big deal. It's a big call, and I know that. I'm just trying to throw it out there because we will soon get down to the pointy end of our work. So I just wanted to see whether anyone had any comments about how we should attack that from here. Martin, you had your hand up? Are you there, Martin?
Yeah, sorry about that. I managed to lose my mute button on my desktop.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for this final slide, which I think is actually quite an important one, because it does give us a basis to try and work out how we think we should be moving forwards. It's not a mutually exclusive list, though, in that I think we do actually have to recognise that different lists exist. They get used for different purposes. For example, Keith helpfully pointed out the Postal Union agreements on the codes that are put at the back of motor cars. There's sort of phenomenal numbers of lists, and they're not always coherent. But I thought that one of the directions that we had in mind was that we're trying to identify a basis framework whereby a country could put its hand up reasonably and say, you can't use that because it is the name of our country. And I think if we try and hold that in mind, it seems to me that we've got some sort of quite fundamental ideas that we've just got to capture. And really, for me, the fundamental idea is that you don't end up with people being confused when they see a string that is at the end of a domain name into thinking that, therefore, that is my country. Yes, noting that different lists exist, yes to the basic concept of using ISO, but I certainly agree with you that there need to be other qualifications. And then the third one, which for me is particularly of concern, is the how to capture all languages. And one of the thoughts that went across my mind is that all countries, well, not actually all countries, but most countries have permanent diplomatic missions in quite a large range of countries around the globe. And they use, outside their building, they have a plaque that says in their national language what the name of the mission is, but that will also have it in language or the script or scripts of the country in which they're in. And I wonder whether that might be the right clue in that, if a country can turn around and say, yes, not only is this, it is not in a script that we use normally in our own borders, but in India, this is the way we represent the name of our country. And so they have an opportunity to show that they are using that particular script combination to represent their country. And I just wonder whether that might be a way through what otherwise starts becoming an incredibly complex subject, as we represent all countries in all languages in all scripts.
Look, thanks for your observations there, Martin. You're absolutely right that as Sokol and others have observed, that all scripts, all languages, et cetera, is the million-dollar question, and how could we possibly acknowledge that? The way that you talked about that proposal is very valid. I'm conscious that there's been an attempt to capture that previously in policy and processes by deferring that to a relevant national authority. And specifically because those authorities would be recognised generally under one or other UN or other IGO processes, they exist, they've been authoritatively recognised, and even if they are the ones that say, yes, this is what we put on the plaques outside of our missions in our countries, and I remind everyone, I live in Canberra, so I do drive past quite a few of those missions. Their Australian missions, but you need some entity that can make that authoritative statement. Perhaps that's there will be a role to be played in terms of identifying who asserts that authority or genuine claim for it. Some of the other observations you made there, Martin, I also wanted to pick up on was as part of our process, we were trying to get towards, at the end, you asserted, you to say to someone, well, you can't go for that name, you can't get that name because that's the name of my country. Yes and no, broadly speaking, the way I've paraphrased that may sound somewhat defensive singularly focused on what is my country and what is not, and therefore asserting the rights of the country. You then followed up by talking about not ending up in a state of confusion where people think, oh, well, therefore that is my country. I think the purpose of this group is to also start laying the framework for some sort of system, or the way ICANN approaches this process, that will also avoid confusion from businesses' perspective, from potential new utility applicants' perspective, from whoever else's perspective, not just it's very easy for us to be stuck in the prism of country codes and looking at everything through that perspective, but it's not just that. It's also for everyone else in the community to have clarity around the rules of what you can and can't apply for. There are very few people out there who will deny the rights of states to assert their authority over their country's name. Some may not be satisfied with anything short of a completely open and liberal marketplace, but most will acknowledge that there is a role in representation for country names, and they should be protected. How we do that needs to be really clear for the benefit of all. As Bart's just noted in the chat room, yes, there is a list that indicates that there's over 7,500 languages, and that everything grows exponentially in terms of when you start overlapping all country names. multiply by all of those languages, you end up with an absolutely huge number. I'm conscious that we've now hit the hour mark, and rather than putting out a tempting teaser in terms of the last slide, this is the question that I just wanted to flag here, to raise here. We've largely gone through most of the categories. There are a few ideas there that if anybody wants to chip in on or feels strongly about or wants to offer some commentary, I'd very much encourage you to do that to the list now, as it will inform our discussions and deliberations in Prague. This is where we get down to the pointy end of our work and start trying to address some of the difficult questions, the all languages one being a particular one. I'm cautious that when we get to Prague, I'll probably reiterate the scope of this group just one more time, just because we will be talking about very pertinent, very current examples in terms of the IDN CCTLD policy process and new GTLDs in anticipation of round two in 2020, the rate we're going, but that we are not offering direct recommendations or input there or proposing changes of policy, but rather making observations. And they can get quite pointed, and we can say that there are different lists out there. There are inconsistencies between them. ICANN and the community may be best off by sticking to ISO with qualifications, etc., if we can get agreement amongst ourselves that that's a reasonable approach, maybe not. And then delving into those deeper areas of how the heck we're going to actually capture all of this in all languages, it will end up reading like a critique of the current processes, but that's not to say we'll be making recommendations for how we change them. It's a fine line and a point of differentiation, but one that I'll keep making every time we meet anyway. Anyone else have any other comments to make? I'm sorry to wrap it up, but I do realise most people allocate an hour and we've gone a little bit over that. Well, thank you, everyone. I think the way we work through that and the way that people are thinking about and wrapping their heads around these issues is very useful. On our next call in a couple of weeks' time, we've just got a couple of issues that were left over in terms of Indigenous and minority languages and common names. And I was hoping that we'd sort of wrap those up relatively quickly and then just get into this in-depth discussion about some of these trickier items a bit more. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you, everyone, for your time. Comments, interjections, criticisms, etc., very much welcome on the list, and look forward to catching up with you in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everyone.